Bible Study and the Original Languages of Scripture, Part 2, by L. Reed, appeared in the Testimony, January 1956. In Hebrew, there is the idiom of intention or determination, which is illustrated by the fact that if a person is really determined to do a thing, he speaks of it as being already accomplished. In Judges 6:16, we have an example of the incomplete form of the verb being followed by the complete, with the latter being used idiomatically, namely indicating that the action of the verb is considered completed. Notice how differently this verse is translated by the authorized version as "thou shalt smite," and by Dr. Young's literal translation as "thou hast smitten." It would seem at first that one or the other may be misleading, but if we as students and readers are aware of this idiom and verb formation in Hebrew, we can see that each translation has its merit. The context leads us to understand that the smiting has yet to come, and the idiom expresses the certainty of the event, and we feel that the authorized version is to be preferred here. All that the English reader loses is the intense emphasis of the original. We see this idiom of certainty often, as in the instance of Abraham bartering for land in which to bury his dead. Buyer and seller are alike declaring that they had given the land or the money, when in actual fact neither was the case. Similarly in Ruth, the Hebrew text says, "Naomi hath sold," which the authorized version very neatly represents by "selleth a piece of land." The intentions of God are so expressed with reference to Abraham as, "A father of many nations have I made thee," upon which we have the comment, "When as yet he had no child." And this brings us to the idiom of repetition, to which an associate editor referred in his section of the Testimony for March 1944. Attention is drawn to the amateur Hebraist who insists that "dying thou shalt die" is the correct translation of Genesis 2:17. It is in the marginal rendering, and not as given in the main authorized version text, "thou shalt surely die." If one consults Alphys Israel in the section "The Tree of Knowledge," it will be seen that much is made of this variation, and also something which is now considered to be somewhat misleading. In fact, later editions of the work carry a note to this effect, and similar instances are given, such as "eating, thou shalt eat," in the previous verse. Doubtless the so-called amateur Hebraist obtained his argument from this source and merely repeated it, but if he'd stayed long enough with Hebrew and its idioms, he would very soon have shed his ideas. A knowledge of Hebrew, however small, enables one to grasp fineness of meaning not only in the larger works of recognized authors, but also in the contributions of the more seasoned writers in such publications as the Testimony and the Christadelphian. And we see such an instance in the Christadelphian for May 1955. The author of the article on Ecclesiastes favours readers with a most instructive note to those who are making an attempt to grasp the language of Scripture and its inner meaning. And the note refers to Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verses 11 to 13 as follows. In verses 11 and 13, owner is in the plural, but qualified by the singular, his eyes, his hurt. It is therefore a plural of eminence, as in Genesis 39:8. What is this plural of eminence, which also appears in Ecclesiastes 7 verse 12 and 8 verse 8? The plural of eminence is just another Hebrew idiom, and briefly means that if the ancient Hebrew writer wished to indicate anything as great, he simply made it many. Hence, we have in the original Hebrew, blindnesses in Genesis 19:11, salvations in Psalm 42:5, and masters in Genesis 24:9, and lords in Genesis 40:1. Similarly, a cruel death is described in the original of Ezekiel 28:10 as to die the death. Again, we have that much discussed name of God, Elohim, plural of Eloah, which to the present writer is the plural of majesty. The student very soon becomes interested in roots, their growth and outgrowth, so to speak, and many significations which arise from them. And we call to mind a term which has quite recently been discussed, kikar. Basically, it indicates something circular, hence a tract of land or a desert. But why? When one stands on an open tract of land, one is bounded by the line of the horizon, and in effect is standing within a huge circle, as in Genesis 13 verse 10. Here we have kikar lechem, or cake of bread, in Exodus 29:23, and kikarim, or talents, of silver. In each case, the circularity is the salient feature, although the objects differ widely in other respects. Many Hebrew words possess similar attraction of interest as to their roots. One which appears very frequently is ge'al, meaning to release, set free, redeem. The last name claiming our interest. Hebrew law obliged one at times to redeem another person or the land. The one so operating became the ge'al, or redeemer. It was sometimes the function of such a person to avenge when any of the family was slain. Hence, we have the signification of the avenger and in carrying out this duty he became polluted by blood. And there is a progression of signification with the changing circumstances: to redeem, a redeemer, an avenger, and then polluted. As with most Hebrew terms, the student is always seeking the meaning of the idiom and gradually gaining some degree of mastery of the language. The authorized version, in its honesty and desire for truth, places certain words of its translation in a different type of print, that is, in italics. They are added to give the sense, or because there is no equivalent in Hebrew. We notice that wherever the verb to be appears, italics are used. And the student very soon learns that the reason for this is that Hebrew has no verb to be. In the Christadelphian for March 1952, the writer of an article quotes from Dr. N.H. Snaith's book, Distinctive Ideas of the Old Testament, as follows. The Hebrew does not say that Jehovah is or that Jehovah exists, but that he does. Properly speaking, the Hebrew verb hayah does not mean to be so much as to come to be. Hebrew has no real verb of being, but one of becoming. The verb is active, not static. This is most strongly marked in the Hebrew idea of God. Jehovah is known by what he does. And it will be seen how this blends in with the other peculiarity of the Hebrew verb we have referred to previously, namely, no tense. It has rather a very definite indication of state. It is done or being done. Hence, the salient idea of the Hebrew name of God, Eyah, Asher, Eyah, is he is doing and will continue to do.